Well, hey there, folks, and welcome to the Jason Wright Show. I have got a terrific guest for you today. Hugh Massey is the executive chairman and founder of DNA Behavior International. Hugh is often referred to as the money energy pioneer. This comes after 20 plus years of helming the only behavior and money insights company, which he founded to discover, measure, and manage the hidden influences of behavior and money energy forces on decision making, performance, and relationships. Hugh came to this work after a journey as a reformed CPA, as he says, and wealth manager, having learned that good decision-making was centered in self-awareness of one's own innate behavioral identity and a healthy relationship with money. The tech he has developed benefits over 2 million plus people annually in 125 countries and 11 languages. In fact, since 2001, DNA Behavior has enabled teams and advisors to leverage 4,000 plus behavior and money insights via their own tech stacks, ISV or otherwise. Hugh is an award-winning author, most recently of the white paper, Mastering Your Money Energy, which helps advisors, coaches, and others learn how to measure money energy as well as understand its significance for every area of life. Folks, Hugh is awesome. I was so fascinated by kind of this, like a we discussed in the podcast, like an epigenetic approach to behaviors. It's like we are all born with innate learned behaviors due to genetics, our environment, experiences, all these things. But that doesn't mean that we can't identify and change those behaviors. And it all starts with understanding who we are at our core, understanding our identity. And Hugh has the tools and the methodologies to bring that to light. This was a fascinating conversation for me, and I just know you're going to enjoy it. So thank you so much for listening to this conversation between me and executive chairman and founder of DNA Behavior International, Hugh Massey. Enjoy. You know, I've tried to get better. And by the way, folks, I've just hit record. I got Hugh Massey here, and this is the conversation's already just kind of like out of a cannon. This is going to be a lot of fun, I can tell. And we're talking Peloton right now. So I've tried to get a little bit better whenever I'm writing, Hugh, to not, to like what Matt Wilpers always says, on the Power Zone classes, it's there just for high fives. But there's something about whenever I put, if it's a live class and I look at the leaderboard, I can't help it. And my wife makes fun of me because in my mind, the people that are coming up behind me, if they pass me and high five on their way by, yeah, they're going down. I just can't help myself.
Yeah, well, I'm a little bit like that. And I think, you know, Jason, as fellow entrepreneurs, in some ways we like to win, you know, there's a competitive streak underneath.
Yep.
And it, one day it was pointed out to me actually when I was driving a car and I was following this guy I had a bit of business partnership with. And it was just after I'd come to live in Atlanta from Sydney. And he said, Hugh, did you notice how at every segment of the drive back from this 45-minute drive that you overtook me and you went around cars and you went in front? And he said, you know what, that's your competitive streak.
Yeah.
You can't help it, but that's what you do. And you were 10 miles an hour over the speed limit the whole way, going around car that anybody that was going, you know, at 15 miles less than you, you just went around them, including me, right? Yeah. And I thought, I wasn't aware of it. And now, you know, I probably still do the same things, but I'm a lot more aware of it. But it's the same on the Peloton bike.
Yep.
Put me beside people that are trying to push it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't want to be up. Okay.
Yeah. Same. Well, I'm so glad to have you on the show today. And it's really cool because this podcast for me I try to put together a show that I think will be beneficial, obviously have a lot of utility value for the listeners, but I always end up winning in this deal. I mean, I'm the winner from this podcast. I really am. And it's almost serendipitous. I just had a great conversation earlier today on the podcast. I was kind of blown away with how that made sense. And then, Hugh, when I look at your background and then just the brief conversation we've had kind of warming up to this, I know that I'm going to be the beneficiary. So I'm going to try my best to make this good for you and good for the audience. But I can tell you already, I'm going to get the most out of this conversation, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great spirit, Jason, and that's how I feel about it too, that you'll ask me some question and I know I'm going to be triggered in some way and say something I've never said before, or I'll go and take action on something that's just different.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of doing these things and putting yourself out there and allowing magic to happen.
Absolutely. Well, in that spirit, let's just give me a little bit of background. I know you have said this many times in my research. I know you're a recovering accountant, and God bless you. If it had not been for me having a very, very good study group, I never would have gotten through business school, and I certainly wouldn't have gotten through my business accounting courses. I was terrible. So God bless you in that regard. But in addition to being a recovering accountant, kind of give a little bit of background and history that took you from Sydney to now Atlanta, which, by the way, I have a daughter in Atlanta, and I've actually worked in Atlanta on projects, two different points in my career. Love the city. And that led you to now on the Jason Wright Show having this conversation with me. Give us a little bit of background.
Well, firstly, it's been a great life journey. And, you know, a lot of what I believe in is creating an exponential future for yourself and how, and, you know, then is what's the pathway to do that? Well, there's no straight line to that. If you're going to create an exponential future, you got to make some quantum leaps somewhere. And I had the great fortune to spend the first 10 years of my career as a CPA, tax specialist, working in Arthur Andersen, three different countries in Sydney and then Singapore and Thailand. But there came a day where I thought my entrepreneurial spirit took over. I was already out and about doing different things on the side, and it was time to put my head down and become an entrepreneur. I didn't quite fully know what the business would be. You know, I was doing transactions, you know, real estate, some pastoral activities, farming activities, varying things. So I set up a financial services business, a family office business, and that was quite successful. But one day a friend asked me, Hugh, what are you really passionate about? And I said, I want to help people all over the world become financially self-empowered. And that just rocked me. And so I sat back and I thought, well, okay, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And the fact that it's come into my head from my subconscious and I've said it means I've got to go and do something with that. So I spent 6 months or so researching, okay, and thinking, reflecting what this would be and how would it look? And really it came down to, how am I going to wealth mentor other people? And I realized from that, then it meant understanding human behavior. Looked in my day journal. I've been writing about human behavioral issues, psychological frameworks, psychometrics for 3 or 4 years, which had gone back into my accounting career as well. Thought, okay, I need to build a different psychometric-based model to understand people's behavior and how they deal with money. And, you know, I knew that from looking at clients, whether it was back in my corporate career as a CPA, when everybody wants to avoid tax, but really when it gets to the pressure of making that decision, they don't pull the trigger. Or if they do, they're a basket case when the tax department, you know, comes, or the IRS comes to do some kind of review. And it's the same with investing money. I could see people saying, yeah, I want to do this and get into something that's more aggressive with a higher yield, not understanding risk, being more emotional about it. And then they've got to deal with a spouse. You get these phone calls suddenly out of the blue. I'm panicked. And I knew this was money, and money causes stress. And I thought, okay, I need to know how to put a tailor-made suit on every client. That led me to hiring a psychologist in Australia, Carol Pocklington, who still works on our team, you know, 20 years later. And she said, you need to meet these guys in Atlanta. So I came over, just got on an airplane, came over. And that led me to, you know, down the path of building the system, which is DNA Behavior Today. I did 40 flights over the Pacific in 4-year period. While I was still running the wealth management business, other things, and building this. And I thought, okay, I've got to stay in America and build this out. This is my purpose. And that, you know, that was, I suppose, that's coming on 20 years ago now. Wow. And no, I've wobbled at times, or I've got my finger into something else a lot on the journey, but deep down, my calling, my purpose is around human behavior, how people deal with money. And you know, that's where I stand today. And we're, you know, building out our business to hopefully one day impact 1 billion people. We've got a plan there, and step by step, we're unlocking it.
Fantastic. And one of the things, and you're in a good area, I know that some of the most well-heeled individuals I've ever done business with are in Atlanta. Larry Powell and Rick Jackson of Rick Jackson Healthcare, and some of those folks.
His name came up today in a different conversation about Boys Without Fathers.
Well, you know, he's 50 Cent. He's Sean Jackson's mentor. 50 Cent, who has worked with Rick, and Rick was on a board of a company that I was a partner in. So yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yep. Shane, I met recently, but I didn't know about his dad.
Yep.
So it's just interesting, all of these things.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm excited to get in this conversation because I told you that I'm about to embark on my, and by the way, it's kind of weird, Hugh. Like I have started and exited small businesses over the last 10 years, but I haven't taken a big, hairy, audacious leap in years. I've played it very safe over the last, I would say, 10 to 13 years.
Yeah.
And part of that is because I got comfortable. Both of my daughters, like I mentioned to you, I've got one out there. She graduated from the University of Alabama. She's out there in Atlanta now, and my other's in Manhattan. And so both girls are healthy, graduated. My wife and I were comfortable, but I do, and so part of it is I got content. Another thing is there's something that's always been in the back of my mind, Hugh, and I'll be honest with you, I couldn't wait to have this conversation with you because I'm hoping you can give me some insight to this. When I start looking at a business venture, and the minute I start thinking about making a lot of money, scaling it for a big exit, or even just, you know, making a couple million a year in the business, I immediately think I'm wrongheaded. I shouldn't be thinking like that. I shouldn't be thinking about in terms of vast, financial success. And so that's on the big level. But then even like with this podcast has grown exponentially. I could be making a lot of money off this podcast. The minute I start to think about monetizing it, though, it's almost like the whole thing just dissolves. I just don't want to go. I don't want to think about that. And so there's something mentally, like you mentioned, the psychology. That's why I was looking forward to, just from what I know about your background and what you're doing now, there's something in me psychologically that has put a barrier between me and pursuit of financial success on a level that's beyond anything I've ever done before. So I'm hoping you can help me unpack that. So do you have any thoughts on why I might be struggling with something like that? And what would you do with somebody like me if I was a client and I came to you for that kind of coaching?
Yeah, well, I think that at times, Jason, I feel like I've struggled with that too. But I think if you put it in perspective from a number of frameworks, the first thing is there's nothing wrong with making a lot of money and so long as you do it the right way. So, you know, so long as you've not stolen it or, you know, done something really shady, there's nothing wrong with making a lot of money. And as I was saying to someone earlier today, you know, there's lots of stories that I know because I follow this where people have made a lot of money within a short window. But often a lot went into that happening. You know, there are a lot of events, there's a lot of learning, there's a lot of experiences, but they've created something of enormous value that someone's been prepared to pay for. And there's nothing wrong with making a lot of money. Now, yes, there's the tall poppy syndrome out there, which is quite strong in Australia or in England and sort of more in that world that, okay, the person must have done something wrong to have a lot of money, right? Why do they have it? But I think you could say that if you do something that's great, that has a lot of good human impact out there, creates value for people, there's nothing wrong with making a lot of money, right? Now, it's then a matter of, I think, how you handle yourself with it. And I think people struggle with this is they measure success by how much money they have. That becomes the problem. And I think that could also be part of the problem might be part of the problem there for you is, well, how am I going to be measured and rated? Because I think from everything you've told me today, you're a man who holds yourself higher than that in your identity.
Yes. Right?
Most and there might still be a place for you yet to identify or to build your identity even more, right? But I think if you come down to saying, and this is what I do with helping people create an exponential future, and within that you've got to take quantum leaps, is define the result and the outcome around the human impact you're going to have. And so, you know, I've made it, and you can go to my LinkedIn account and see it there, but I've said, you know, how do you have impact of 1 billion? I didn't say, very clear, did not say $1 billion. It could be 1 billion transactions. It could be on your podcast. How do I get an audience of 1 billion people, you know, over the next 10 years that listen to what I've said, right? Or it might be 100 million people, but it's been listened to, you know, each thing's been listened, you know, the same person's listened 10, 20, 50 times.
Right, right.
And from that, there is monetization. So, you know, I initially set my goal with DNA behavior that if I could impact 1 million people a year, I knew financially probably what that would mean. Well, today we've directly had about 2.5 million people participate. That impacts over 100 million relationships. When you look at how many relationships, if each person has 50 relationships, key relationships, that's an impact. But I've also now built pathways to make that number exponential through the way in which we've built our business. But I always think of it as, in, you know, what my guide stick is in measurement is the number of people I'm going to impact directly or indirectly. But there's a financial model that sits off the side, but it is not about the financial model, because beyond a certain level, you don't need the extra money.
Right, right.
It then becomes, what are you going to do with it? So the, you know, the my driver then, Jason, becomes around my identity. And I think if I live true to my identity and uphold myself with, you know, a high level of integrity, then whatever comes in, comes in. But of course, the business model should be responsible. It's not, it doesn't need to be, not all of it needs to be charitable. But I you know, again, how do you build a social impact component to your business? I think that's, a lot of people think, well, I'll make my money first and give it away. There's no harm in doing it on the journey, right? Because it can open up doors to meeting more people, and success in life's about meeting people. But I think coming back to the challenge of, you know, is it okay to make a lot of money? I think it is okay to make a lot of money, and the world needs people to make a lot of money for it to be then pushed back into having impact.
Right. One of the things that you've mentioned I want to touch on real quick is this idea of identity. And I want to tell you kind of like, as far as a definition of terms, like I love this concept. It resonates with me in a little bit different area. Like whenever I'm helping people develop habits, one of the first things I do is say, I touch on this identity. Everything that you do, and going back to James Clear made it famous by saying, everything you do is a vote for or against the person that you want to become. And I'm a big believer in that all of our actions should be a reflection of the identity that we have defined for ourselves.
Yeah.
Am I on the right? Are we on parallel tracks as that relates to finances as well?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think if you start off from the place of who do you want to become, and who are you going to hold yourself accountable for to be, in you know, in your behaviors, your image, how you want people to see you, and that is at a level in a way that's above where you are now. You're putting yourself up there. This is a little bit more than purpose. And then you come back and say, what is essential for me to be doing to live to that identity? And you'll find a whole lot of things can go out of your life that you don't need to have there. There might be something that you need to put in. That's the first step. And then, you know, if you get to, you know, Atomic Habits, which is James Clear, or BJ Fogg's got a very good model there, and I follow that, to do something you enjoy. So let's say that somebody's got a bad money habit, a spending. Are we going to tell them, stop spending? No. Or start saving? That's the word saving. the word saving to a spender is like, that's Antichrist.
Right.
If you say, okay, we've got to have a spending plan, they might hear that. But if you want people to change habits, they've got to do something they enjoy. And so I just say to people, go and find one thing in your life that you enjoy doing and start doing that, even if it's 5 minutes a day or 1 hour a week, program it in, do it. And then once you've mastered that a bit and you see the outcome, it'll build up. Now, it's funny how once you start doing that, it causes you to change your calendaring, where you spend your time. And guess what? You're going to make a change in how you spend money, because let's say that, and I've often encouraged people to do this in the health area, and I did it myself that way. Then the time at work changes, where you spend your money changes. You don't want to eat the same foods. You don't want to drink alcohol, blah, blah, blah. What you do on holidays, vacations changes because you want to do more health oriented things. You know, the list goes on, and you find your financial structure changes. But I think sometimes if you just bang people on the head, it isn't going to work. Now, you know, there are other areas where people have got to make lifestyle changes because they do have a health crisis. But again, find a way to, if you've got to change your eating, find a way to do it that's going to be enjoyable and not a complete punishment. Now, I happen to be quite strict about these things, but there's a way to start for everybody. I think just understanding their motivation in that way. But I think it does come back to identity.
Yeah,
it all comes back to that.
It's interesting you say that. And it has so much to do, like the motto of this podcast is improve always in all ways. And it came from the genesis of that was I had read Walter Isaacson's biography of Da Vinci. And that's where I first learned the history of Vitruvian Man and the fact that Vitruvian Man, by the time Da Vinci drew his version of Vitruvian Man, there have been many before that, and there really is no such thing as that. He just gets the credit for it, he was trying to draw the perfectly proportioned man or human. And that's whenever it served as a muse for me to think about, okay, how could I be the absolute best version of myself, which was always continuous improvement. And that's whenever, you know, 5 years ago, I decided I'm not going to have another drink of alcohol. I'm going to, you know, I'd always exercised and trained. We were talking about the Peloton earlier. I got really, really serious about fitness and longevity and becoming a student of health and wellness. And then this podcast kind of held me accountable, because if I'm going to be the improve always and always guy, I don't want to be a poser. I want people to know that when I talk about these things, I'm actually living them. And it was so powerful for me. The one thing that I have not done, though, and maybe it's because I'm not going to say it's always come easy to me, because it has not. Let me put it this way, Hugh, it's been easy for me to make a good living. That has never been hard for me. And because of that, I wouldn't call myself, you know, wealthy is a relative term, as you well know, I mean, especially globally speaking, but I'm not someone that I would ever say I'm like uber wealthy, where it's just, you know, I've never had that giant windfall to be able to say, okay, I'm done. You know, but I'm to the point now where, and I don't want that to be my identity. I don't care about material things. To me, wealth is debt free and being able to go to Atlanta to see my daughter, Rylan, anytime I want to, go to Manhattan to hang out with Abby anytime I want to, and Jemelin and I to be able to travel anytime we want to, and we're not being financially irresponsible. And we pretty much live like that now, but we still need to make, so now it's to the point where I just want to build something that then I can give a lot back. I mean, part of our mission with this company that I'm starting right now, Authentic Health, is we want to help people that can't afford to go to the guys like you and I, that couldn't afford to go to a precision healthcare clinic. You know, Uganda is somewhere where my business partner Gus goes to help children. We want this company to help support them get the nutrients they need because they don't have enough food. They just don't have. We want to, like you with the things that you're doing that I want to touch on later with fatherless boys. We want to help, and so that's where my mindset is now. But I've got this rub. It's like the only way I'm going to get there. I used to think it was going to be by running for office and being in politics and all this. Now I'm like, no, I need to just be quiet below the radar. I don't care if anyone ever knows who I am, but to be able to help monetarily. And I'm good at leading and organizing. And so now to me, that quantum leap, every time you say that, it resonates with me because I think I've reached a point in my life where I'm ready to take that quantum leap. It's not just incremental. I'm ready to explode into whatever I'm truly called to. I think that that's where I am now.
Yeah, I think energetically, Jason, there are points in your life when you're set up, you want to call it, by the universe and by the actions you've taken, which is all part of the bigger story.
Sure.
That you're ready to go and do that. And yep. Sometimes, you know, there is patches or seasons where you've just got to go along quietly and be accumulating knowledge, making contacts, relationships, and then bang, that moment comes. And we are right here now at a time when health and longevity are a big thing. People are going to live a lot longer. I've set my longevity goal to live to 120. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, what action, and I'm not quite halfway through yet, but, you know, what actions do you need to take to live to that? And, you know, I don't think it needs to all be expensive solutions to do it. I think having some of the right, you know, imaging of your heart and whatnot, probably a good idea. And, you know, doing an ageless RX test or something like that to know if his cancer's on the horizon. But I think that the time is now to do it because people are prepared to have these conversations. Mm-hmm. There's many solutions coming onto the market, which means it doesn't have to be expensive. It's how it's bundled. And I think if you then look at your purpose, your skills, you know, I sort of very big on looking at what's your X factor, what are you passionate about and your talents.
Right.
When you know that, and then maybe you've got to team up with somebody else, that's when a lot of magic can happen. And then what's my calling? You know, and if my calling is to help, you know, a billion people be healthier, happier, stress-free, get medicines, you know, then you build the plan around that.
Right.
And, you know, one thought that came to me that I'll share it is, and this might be part of the quantum leap thinking, is maybe you serve everybody, right, with the healthcare model that you've got. But people know that when they're coming to your clinics or service, that part of it is going to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So that in a way, you know, the wealthier American knows that 20% of the revenue is going to help others. It's they're in effect subsidizing others. And I know this kind of model's now starting to work in a few gyms
mm-hmm.
where, you know, people pay their gym membership, but then part of the revenue is then going to help underprivileged people get physical fitness access because that's then going to help them in all aspects of their life.
Sure thing. Absolutely.
So there's ways to, you know, rethink your own models around all of this. And, you know, you don't have to do the, you know, run a cut rate model just to keep the costs down, you know, across the board. You know, there's different ways to address that business model.
Yeah.
I think.
Let me ask you this. When you have a client,
and you don't have to be in the limelight. I think that when I want to be clear about identity, and this is for you and for the audience,
yeah,
building the right identity for yourself doesn't necessarily mean, well, gee, I'm going to go from being hidden behind the curtain to some person out there that's in the limelight every 2 minutes.
Right, right. And that's one of the things I want to get to, because I think you and I, we know it instinctively because we work on our identity. But there a lot of people hearing this, they're going to think, well, I am my name, or I am the closest they could get maybe is I am a lawyer. That's my identity. And that's an element of their identity.
Yeah.
And I know that I would imagine that your analysis of trying to help someone figure out their identity so that you can then take that as part of how it's going to help their financial plan, their future financially and in their wealth building is got to be quite extensive, but just kind of as detailed as you want to get, I'll take as much time as you'll allow. How do you help that person that comes in and says, Hugh, I don't know who I am. What are some of those probing questions to help them start to get to a point where beyond their name, where they're from, their parents, their spouse, their job, things they like, can they start digging into matching that identity in such a way with their true dreams, desires, ambitions, to where now those things, those can work in sync to have impact?
That is the key step that needs to be taken. And I would say that for people that are wanting, for example, financial planning help or career help, you know, doing something that's major in that respect, or they're about to retire, that you shouldn't make any decision until you have this clear. And if it takes you 6 months or a year to sort it out, do so. I think that, you know, for example, there are people out there, Jason, that you and I will probably both know, that have sold businesses or had some major, you know, windfall somewhere, or an inheritance or whatever it is, or even an event that's gone wrong on the other side of their life, you know, it's something negative, and they're suddenly into something else, or they've made some big choice. That is the wrong thing to do. You, in a way, want to give yourself time. And the way I express identity is that you are not a human doing, you're a human being. And what is your place of being? And that story has been building all of your life. You may not know it. You know, the fact that, you know, that you might have lived in a certain suburb, done certain activities, your original career was as an accountant or whatever. Sorry. That is sort of the doing part that you're referring to.
Okay.
But then, you know, and what I get people to do is this in three segments, is to block it, is to write down all of the sort of the doing stuff for, say, the first 20 to 25 years of their life, put all that down in one column. Then the next column is, okay, where's that evolved to?
Okay.
You know, I was an accountant, I was a lifeguard, played golf, went to, you know, all boys boarding school, lived in X suburb, I'm Australian. Next middle part, you know, I'm now living in America, I'm an entrepreneur, running X businesses, designing, you know, doing ABCD. That's starting, I'm on the board of X. It's getting closer to the being, but then the last part starts to become a lot more of the why, reflecting my X factor, how I'm impacting people, and really, how do I show up as a human being? And, you know, people come to me, you know, for wisdom, I think would be one of the reasons people come to me. I'm very good at architecting behavioral solutions that solve a business problem. You know, I've learned to look at every business problem or life problem has got a behavioral connection. And with that is a money issue and stress. And so through that lens, I design, whether it's a plan for a business, a technology platform. So we've built, you know, more than 100 apps that sort of address that in varying settings, or just coaching someone to make a quantum leap. But it comes from that greater place of being. And mine is still evolving too.
Yeah,
it's an evolution. But I've got to a much greater place of clarity that now I could say, okay, if my activities and business activities don't generally fit within something that's related to behavioral solutions, and there's quite a broad ambit there, you know, we're working on something that might help healthcare, right? And then there's other initiatives, leadership in a very different type of model. I don't touch it.
Mm.
Now, once upon a time, I was into, you know, real estate deals, running community living villages and lending money, but, you know, it wasn't connected enough to my purpose.
Yeah.
And every time I do those things, some of them were very successful, but other ones, you know, were not as successful. And you think, this is a drag on my time and it's taking me away from the bigger goal of how I'm going to have human impact. And I don't know I want to be remembered for doing those deals.
You nailed something right there, Hugh, that I think has been a barrier for me. So I was an all-state football player, went to school on a football scholarship until I gave it up and worked my way through. Problem was, I hated playing football. I was good at it. I just hated doing it. And so I was never going to be at the level I could have been. Almost every single vocation I've ever had has been the same way.
Yeah.
Like that first business I bought that I told you about before we came on. I had never been in real estate in my life, and I bought a real estate business because I could. I just knew I wanted to be in business for myself. I wanted to move back to East Texas to raise my daughters. And I never experienced, you know, really wealth accumulation through that to the level that I would like to, because I think it never matched with a passion. And I never wanted to be known as a big real estate tycoon. That was never, that just wasn't my makeup. And so that really resonates with me when you talk about things you've done, you can have success, but they're never going to be the really big breakthroughs because you weren't passionate about it to begin with. One of the things I want to ask you too, so I know DNA behavior, is that, okay, that title, that the name of that, your philosophy company, does that mean DNA, does that come from the fact that we are born with a certain DNA that will dictate some of our behaviors, that will impact our wealth accumulation, our views of health and all that? And so therefore, kind of almost in an epigenetic approach, we go, okay, look, this is the way your DNA is going to cause you to look at money. So therefore, we're going to help you figure out ways to either enhance that or counter that so that you can find success in it. Is that kind of where that comes from?
Absolutely. And it is, now that I understand epigenetics and what that is, it is completely an epigenetic approach.
Okay, got it.
And so, you know, your evolution as a human starts at conception. Some might argue it started before that because there's an environment that you're conceived in. You know, we could, I don't think we need to explore that anymore, but you are set up with a set of, you know, you've got some genetics that you, that have come from your mum and dad, right? But you can turn those on or off, or you will be driven to be turning those on or off. And that's, that process starts either in conception or it starts afterwards in the environment you're born into. And by the time you're 80, by the time you're 3 years old, 85% of who you are at the core is already shaped. And by 7 years old, it's 95%. And there's a lot of, science that's come out in the last 15, 20 years about that. It, even although I had named the company and defined that before then, because people knew it, but there's a lot more proven research around that now. But that is epigenetics. And, you know, I believe in that, you can, through, you know, by understanding the epigenome, you can turn on or off certain genes, maybe not all of them, but you can. And that is also what's important in the world, not to play victim to anything or that, oh, gee, because mum had this disease, well, I'm going to have it. Yeah, there's certain ones that I think you're not going to get past, or but you could delay its impact or how bad it will be or when, and you know, mentally how you manage it. But that's the epigenetics. It's a you know, it's a big conversation, but that is DNA behavior. And when you take that by knowing your DNA behavior, it's what shapes your attitudes to life, and it will shape your attitudes to money, and they are completely tied together.
I think that's one of the things that people.
And if you get to understand who you are really as the what we would call the DNA hardwired behavior.
Yes.
If you can understand that, that's your core. Yep. So it is a mix of genetics and early learned behaviors, to be clear. Then you can work with that foundation, and of course you're going to have life experiences after that. Whether you know some of the life experiences are going to be good, and some of them are going to be negative. The later those life experiences happen, you can probably do something about them so they're not as damaging, but they're still experiences, as opposed to like me, my dad dying when I was one, right? That is very firmly shaped in me, and my brother wasn't even born. He was conceived, but my mum was pregnant. Different impact on him, but it's an impact. And we are polar opposites. As kids or as boys, and there's, you know, you can get to the reasons of that by, you know, understanding, I suppose, the process. But I think if you understand and accept that, then you can work with it, and then you can make modifications in your life. Just to say that, okay, my hard wiring is a certain way, is that an excuse for you to show up that way every time, or deal with money that way every time, or handle people in the particular way that I am as an initiator? No. I've got to modify myself to succeed. But under pressure, I'm going to revert back to that.
So,
and my comfort zone is going to be in that. And that's why I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why, you know, if you take my brother, he's a pediatrician, completely opposite, right? But we should both be proud of what we are and who we are, but it's how we manage it and show up in life. And I think that's what you're alluding to. And I know, Jason, you understand, but that's what we've done as a company in a way is we want people to understand that as a core framework to start their journey in dealing with money. Because really, when you're dealing with money, money is only an energy. Money is only what you think it is. Mm-hmm. Understand that. Really understand yourself. Then you can make better money decisions.
You know, one of the things that I've realized later in my life. So when I was probably in my early 20s and 30s, when I thought I was much smarter than I am or was, I used to kind of look at my dad and some of the business decisions that he had made, and I probably was very judgmental. As I've gotten older, I realize so much of his financial behaviors were learned and inherent in how, and then I really realized this when I started seeing it in myself. I am so much like my father, both for the good and for the bad, both how I've raised my daughters, the way I get angry at them at times, and my visceral reaction to some of the things they do, but also how I relate to money and this idea of accumulating wealth. And so now I have tried to, one, be much more graceful toward him, but also I can also identify, go, wow, this is a dad view, that not to bash him, but to say, I won't be successful. I will have the same results he had if I exhibit the behaviors he exhibited, and that's what I'm doing. So I've got to change course. And so I got to believe when you're working with your clients, when they start to understand that, there's a certain sense of relief, because one, I don't have to blame my parents. I don't have to blame my environment. Yeah. All those things are factors. I'm not negating those. I'm not dismissing those. But to be able to say, yes, you grew up in a bad place. You had bad examples, and going back three generations, you're seeing the results of behaviors and actions from way back that are hardwired into you. However, you can change these, and we can help you. And that's got to give some of your. I know it's when I started to understand that about myself, man, it gives you a lot of relief and hope.
I think so. I think what it does is that when you understand this, it gives you a chance to love yourself first.
Sure.
And to see that, okay, there's been certain patterns going on in the way you've made choices and decisions, and you want to own that, and you want to be able to say, okay, when I've made good decisions, I followed this pattern. You can see that. When I made bad ones, it's because I did this. And there will be a consistent pattern every time, but you've got to give yourself permission, you know, in there also that you might have failed a few times. It's part of it. I think then it's how, you know, how do you learn from all of that? But the key thing I think a lot of it is, Jason, is to love yourself and not to play victim to genes or, what your parents gave you or not gave you.
Right.
About you and your identity and your life, and they set you up partly to go out and do something great and calling, and you go out there and find what it is and you do it.
Right.
And if a lot of money comes because of it, great.
Will you define self-love a little bit? Because I think people have different understanding. A lot of people will hear that and they'll be like, oh gosh, woo-woo, self-love, no way. Tighten up. My dad's favorite saying was tighten up and carry on. And I think he's gotten better at this. I know I've gotten a lot better of like, whenever I first heard this, Hugh, when somebody said, would you ever speak to your closest friend the way you speak to yourself? That's when the light bulb went off with me. So,
I think that's one of the tests. I think it's partly is always go to places or be with people that love you, respect you, understand you.
Yeah.
Don't need to fight against energy forces where that's not true. Mm-hmm. Accept that you've got some great talents and love those and work out how you're going to do something useful with those. Mm-hmm. And also accept that with the flip side of your greatest talents or strengths are struggles. And, you know, as an example of that, you could be a great communicator, great presenter, orator, but on the other side, you might talk too much. And you might have situations, gee, I regret that I said that to ABCD people, person, right? I said too much. Well, that happens, you know, a talkative salesperson can lose the deal when they've actually made the deal, you know?
Yeah.
But you can't hate that for yourself. I think hate that about yourself. I think what you've got to do is own it and recognize, okay, I've got a gift here, and go and own that gift. And, you know, loving yourself is not going around walking around with some big ego, you know, sometimes as that's associated with. Or on the other side, you don't need to walk around saying I'm a bad person. You might be a misfit with certain people, or some people may not appreciate who you are. Well, move on and find a place where they do, because there is that place. I struggle with that at times because some people don't understand how I'm operating. I'm more introverted. I can be skeptical or whatever. Okay. But there's a lot of people out there that want that.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, part of, you've alluded to this today, Jason, as well. I think for us as entrepreneurs, you know, we've had the chance to go and do some great things. We've made some money, is to be compassionate to others. I that is a learned thing for me, to show gratitude, to always say thank you and mean it. That's all part of it, I think.
You know, one of the things you touched on there that I think is important, that's really hard. I don't know. I have no idea whether this is, I would imagine, because Australian culture is very rooted in British culture to some degree, as is American culture, that we have a very, very hard time of doing something you just mentioned there, of even acknowledging the things we're good at. That's braggadocious. That's arrogant. That's conceited. We're supposed to play ourselves down almost to the point of being self-effacing. I know I was raised in a household where the least bit of confidence was seen as haughtiness, arrogance. I mean, my dad would be really quick to let me know real quick if I thought and sometimes it would be just because I had done something really good. And I think there was almost a projection there of, this might lead to you thinking that you're someone. And like, his father would never tell him he was proud of him, would never tell him he had done a good job, because he was worried. So I was raised in this household where you just never admitted your strengths. How do we, in a healthy way, take inventory of the things we're good at and balance being not being arrogant or whatever? How is there a strategy to make sure that we're doing that in a healthy way?
Well, the way I do it in a practical sense is, I suppose if I'm helping somebody work on their identity, then the first thing we're going to do is, out of knowing their DNA style, which we talked about a few minutes ago, it's to know what those inherent strengths are,
okay,
and what the struggles are, and then, you know, work on, okay, where are the situations that you've used those that have been successful for you, then could be successful, working on the passions as well, adding those things together. Okay, here's my X factor. How's that going to show up? What's my mission going to be? And so taking, you know, quite a measured approach in some ways to that conversation, although in a way there's a magic in it as well, because you can start to see how these things have been happening for a while now or being unfolding, what's been shut down. I think that's important. And, you know, I think that there's nothing wrong with going out and saying, I am great at doing A, B, C, D, but you can, then it comes down to communication of not making somebody else feel smaller. How do you empower them to feel good about themselves? And the fact that, you know, you and I are entrepreneurs doesn't mean we're better than somebody that's in a corporate career or doing something different. We're just wired differently, or doesn't make them better than us just because they're the CEO of ExxonMobil and we're running a smaller company. They haven't come from the same place. You know, I've joined this group called Titan 100. Well, I suppose we had to be elected and voted in and all this sort of stuff, but there's some people there that have CEOs of multi-billion dollar businesses. Mine's not that. Does it make me smaller than them? No.
Right.
I've gone out and done stuff from the grassroots up. But how you communicate with people and the tone you put into it, I can imagine that, you know, if you've got a father that's an entrepreneur and reasonably successful in his own right, and you give him a bit of back chat, he's going to want to slap you down. Or you're working in a corporate and you've got a boss that wants to be in the limelight, and then suddenly you've come up with a good idea and you're trying to show yourself up to get promoted, and in a way that crosses over him mm-hmm. or her, you're going to get slapped back down. Should you or not? No, that's about mature leadership in bringing others along, you know, and this is part of it, is to allow others to shine. And in that, allow you to shine. I think that's a leadership lesson too.
You know, that's one of the things that has helped me a lot, is that for the longest, like, especially as an entrepreneur, I thought I had to be good at every single aspect of the business. I remember when I went to business school, whenever I thought that, because I really struggled with corporate finance. I'm not good at figuring weighted average cost of capital and doing valuation, yeah. figuring hurdle rates. It's just, I thought I was lesser. It took a sledgehammer to my confidence until I realized that I don't have to be good at those things. I have other strengths. And now that I'm able to acknowledge the strength that I do have in a healthy way, it has made it easier for me to go, yeah, I'm not good at that. I need to hire someone who's really good at that. If it was an accounting issue, you know, if I need a CFO, I need to go find Hugh Massey or someone with his background. But I'm not that person. I've got other talents. And so that has really been helpful.
Yeah.
And it's also helped me figure out the things to not get into the trap of pursuing business endeavors that I have in the past. They sounded good. There were things I wish I were good at that would make me feel and look smart and maybe make some money, but really I had no business doing it because I knew deep down I was terrible at it. I think I'm finally at a point now at 49 years old where I'm able to go, yeah, I'm not good at that. You don't want me to do that. I've told people that now that have tried to hire me for different projects. I'm like, no, you think you do, but you don't. You can do better.
Yeah. And I think that, Jason, that, you know, a big part of that is knowing coming back to what your X factor is. And what's that one thing that you can be the greatest in the world at,
yeah.
that you're going to get 10 out of 10 at, and you could still continue improving, but it doesn't feel like work.
Right.
You almost feel like you're in retirement doing it. I think that's that activity. And then looking at that and saying, how does that slot into a business? I'm sure with your background, training, skills, you could be 8 out of 10 at a lot of things, including finance. But you know what? It's not exciting for you. So don't worry about it. But at the same time, I would say if you're going to be a business owner, have enough sort of attention to it to watch what's going on, right? Not to be negligent. But even though I was a great accountant, I would put that as one of my 8 out of 10s. And it's that thing that you're 10 out of 10 at, and where does that apply to? And then look at what then start sort of looking at the type of business you're in, the industry, and that might also dictate your role. You might be a founder and very instrumental to a business and its growth, right? Because you're behind the product. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean you have to be the day-to-day CEO or cheerleader either.
Right.
Well, somebody, you are that, but somebody, the company president, is doing all of the other stuff that you're not as good at. You know, I think that that's how all those things get set up. It's important, but that's why we've got to do, you and I have got to do this work on ourselves, and everybody else has got to do it.
I want you to, kind of going backwards, I want you to unpack a little bit more about money as energy. I want the audience to truly get an understanding of what you mean by that.
So the way I describe it to people is there's three dimensions of money. Money is a currency. You see that in, you know, banknotes, bank bills, what's in your bank account. That's the currency. That's what you've got to exchange. Something costs $100, you pay $100. Or you've saved $100, you can spend that later on. That's sort of money as a currency. And then money is behavioral. I think that goes back to our epigenetics conversation before. Money's what you think it is. It's your perspective on it. You know, money is to be used for life experiences, like you were talking about how you and your wife you know, want to spend time with your daughters who are living in New York and Atlanta. Well, money is for education. You know, there's, I suppose, purposes, there's beliefs. And then the other part is, this is really where the real energy is money is just there in your subconscious mind 24/7 in some way. And it's part of the energy that you walk around with. It's part of, it's omnipresent in you. You go to sleep thinking about something that's, could be going to sleep thinking about a relationship that you have somewhere in life. It could be with a business partner. Money's attached to that, because then what you're thinking about that will then be probably what you wake up with, and you go and do something and money's tied to it. Or you've got a child that you're worried about that's spending too much money or not living life properly in some way. Money's tied to all of those things. And that's playing on you the whole time. And I think that, you know, looking at it very broadly and energetically, money is an energy field that's with you 24/7. And you can be carrying levels of stress with it that are eating you up, because it's a constant source of worry. And I think if anybody starts to look at, what are they worrying about? You know, you could say, well, I'm worried about my job, or I'm worried about a relationship or an activity or whatever. Most of the time, if not all the time, money's tied up with it somewhere, even if it's only a little bit. And that's, you know, that's the reason why I say money doesn't sleep.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's
because it's some of this could be, you might say, well, I'm not thinking about money today, or not worried about money today, but in your deep subconscious, it's there. I've heard people say that to me. You know, I don't need to do ABCD processes with you because money's not important. But what I want to do is live a great lifestyle. Well, those two things are not separate.
That's exactly right.
And how do you get there? And that's deep in your subconscious. So the issue that's in your mind might not be money as such, but it's tied to it in some way.
Yeah, I know for the longest, Hugh, that was like my greatest fear, aside from something happening to my daughters, was the fear of going broke. It just used to consume me. It mattered not how much money I had in the bank. I just had this fear and this concern. And it can really be detrimental to your mental health.
And I think that for entrepreneurs, you know, and I know some of the audience will be entrepreneurs. They're always worried about money and, okay, my scorecard is money. The reality is, there's always someone who's got more than you.
Yep.
Doesn't matter how much you make. You could be a billionaire, and you're living in the billionaire's row somewhere in a neighborhood. There will be someone there that's probably got more than you.
Yep.
And it might be someone you don't expect, because they haven't shown all of their cards. And there'll be people who've got less than you. And that's why I come back to what we talked about earlier, you know, in our conversation, Jason, about identity and sort of setting your quantum leap, you know, your exponential future and quantum leap goals. If it's tied to money, will always be a problem.
Yeah.
Right. And if you fail, you know, it's like, or you lose a lot of money in the process, does that mean you're a failure? No. You know, what if you lost all of your money because you got sued? Does that mean you're a failure as a human being and that your life's worthless? I don't think so.
You know, one of the things
you've defined it as money, and that's your identity, then you have got a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a mental health issue.
Of course. And one of the things you reminded me of with your billion, not dollars, but impact, essentially.
Just 1 billion impact. Yep.
Impact, exactly.
Take what you want to do with that.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you know, Tony Robbins, he decided at a very young age, he wanted to feed 1 billion people. I want to be a billionaire. I want to make $1 billion. I want to do $1 billion worth of speaking engagements. It was, I want to feed 1 billion people. And if there's ever a guy that I think has executed on his mission in a lot of areas, and a lot of people get him wrong, I think. I don't think they understand just how talented and how a lot of the things that he talks about are things that you're keying in on here that really resonate, I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, from what I know of Tony Robbins, he's very genuine in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think good luck to him that he is a 6'8" guy that, you know, giant that can go in there and command a room. And what he does is not easy.
Right.
And, you know, no energy. I haven't been to one of his programs. You know, I've done other things.
Right.
But do I, from what I've seen or heard, do I disagree with any of it? No.
Right.
Absolutely not. I mean, and as you said, I'm probably speaking a lot of the same language. It's just come to me from different settings and ways, but I'm also could never be Tony myself because I'm not cut that way. But does that mean I can't have huge impact in some other area, in other ways and be happy with that? Yeah. You know, I don't desire to be him, but I think, and not that you were bringing it up in that way, but I think that that's also important for people to understand that, you know, this comes about in different ways.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's so cool about this whole idea of the behavior behind it. That's what's just clicking as I hear you speak these wisdoms is like, these are things that, you know, that both from a psychological standpoint, we've mentioned James Clear, BJ Fogg, who is Stanford, you know, PhD researcher that has figured these things out. Jim Rohn, I mean, the identity and the work part and the discipline. These are all things that, and that's the beautiful thing. A lot of people, when they hear there's nothing new under the sun, they think, oh, well, it's all been done. No, but the problem is we live in a time now, Hugh, where there's more knowledge than has ever existed in the history of humankind. But that doesn't matter if you don't do anything with it. And so what I hear you saying, it just makes sense. And it comes back to this idea of figuring out, and you tell me if I'm wrong, because I'm trying to surmise kind of what I've gathered from this is that you've got to figure out what your defaults are for your behaviors, match those up with these universal behaviors that have yielded success from time past.
Yeah.
And if in anything that you have that is your natural default that contradicts with these behaviors, there are tools and strategies that you've got to leverage that work with your natural defaults to allow you to be able to adopt those behaviors in such a way that you can take those quantum leaps forward and to whatever that means to you, whatever that means, feeding a billion people, having a billion elements of impact on individuals, whatever that looks like to you, you've got to figure those pieces out before you can really take that quantum leap. Am I getting
correct? You've got to do that hard work first, sort yourself out, make the adjustments. And for some people that takes a year and others it takes 60, right?
Yep.
But you keep going at it and then you believe in the bigger vision. And in some way that if you keep believing in that and you're taking the right actions and steps and making the adjustments, the course corrections, you will manifest that into reality. And there will one day for all of us be a person that shows up, that shows us a path to, this is how you can jump across this chasm, you know, come with me or go and do X. And then you've got to have the courage to do it. But in a lot of ways, you've got to be prepared and have already done the work so that it happens. Now, for some people, that's just happened subconsciously, very subconsciously, and it's not as deliberate as you and I have made out. But I think there's a lot of work you do on yourself first. Tony Robbins is not an accident.
Right.
He's done a lot of work. Has he got to the goal of feeding a billion people? I've seen him in action talking about that on the stage at a group I belong to called Abundance 360 last year. It's not an accident, mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
But did that happen overnight? No. You know, and I'm sure that Tony, in his own way, is continually working on himself.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure.
Because every experience he has, like you sort of introduced this call of talking to people, being on the stage, coaching, you know, 5,000 people at one time, he's benefiting from that, from the questions. That's sort of edging him closer to the game.
Yeah. Well, and I want to say something too that I commend you on by coming on this show today. So I had someone that I asked recently to come on the show that essentially said my audience wasn't big enough. And I'm like, well, you're going to get about 50,000 downloads on your episode. And I didn't say this at first, but first of all, I was surprised because it was a guy that I'm very like-minded with, had a lot of success. He's had a book out that he's trying to move. And I'm like, this podcast will sell a lot of books for you. And I love your message. And essentially his response was, yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I only go on things that are, you're not big enough for me, and which I respect. Fine. Okay. But to me, I'm like, why would you skip that opportunity? It is low hanging fruit for you to have impact. And his mission is fantastic. It's why I reached out to him. And it really surprised me because I don't get a lot of no's because I don't reach out that much. And so I don't get a lot of no's. So I was really surprised. So I think, you know, kudos to you, not for coming on my show, but just the fact that I love that idea of every single time you do something like this, it has nothing to do with monetary success. You're not selling anything. It's about reaching that billion, points of impact. That resonates. I think that is awesome.
Because I know that this conversation we've had today, which is very rich, and, you know, sometimes you do the podcasts and they're not always, but I find somehow everyone that I do, and it's not, you know, some people don't want me, right? But I know that. But the people who do, and particularly the ones I've done in the last year or so, have all been rich. And I know this conversation is going to be out there and heard way beyond our lives.
Absolutely. 100%.
Just like, you know, I follow Aristotle of Athens now that I understand him and his work there, you know, in Greece, in, you know, 350 BC or thereabouts, and Plato and Socrates and whatnot. His work's being followed now.
That's exactly right.
And isn't it exciting to think that this conversation in some format is going to be heard or listened to or transcribed for the next few thousand years?
Absolutely.
And I think that's perhaps what a short-sighted person who's just put a dollar sign on it, or I've got to sell a certain number of books, and I know if I'm on a podcast with Jason, 50,000 downloads, I'm only going to sell, you know, X number of books, possibly missed out on.
Yeah, right.
You know, because there's a big multiplier here in some way. And, you know, you've got big plans to impact humanity with health. I love that. And I think it's a very challenging goal, but there's lots of ways that you're going to be able to make that work.
Right. Absolutely.
The magic here is that, you know, you'll be in Atlanta sometime and we're going to connect in person
Something
going to transpire, or we're going to help each other in another way that we don't even know today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's what you miss by not being on these calls. But yeah, there's filters people have got to apply. I think that's okay too.
Sure. I respect that. Now, before I let you go, I can't go without talking about boys without fathers. You mentioned you lost your father when you were a year old. I told you that that's something that just the impact of fatherless homes is something that's on my heart because I think it has an impact, not just on those individual boys and households and young men, but just society at large. I think it has a very powerful impact. I have two daughters. I think it has an impact on the type of men that are out there for them to one day marry. So kind of tell me about the work you're doing and why this resonated with you, Hugh, to take on as part of your impact in life.
So, this came to me in varying conversations. So obviously I'm a boy without a father, and my dad died when I was one. And as I found my life purpose of wanting to help people become more self-empowered, with that there was, you know, if you want to call it a sub-purpose or a sub-moonshot goal of wanting to build some kind of foundation or charity for youth development. And I mentioned this to the guys that, you know, 20 years ago were helping me build the DNA behavior, science, if you want to call it that. And one of them said, well, Hugh, it's because you want to do that because you didn't have a father and you want to mentor people. And so that's sort of, I could see that. And somebody else actually a few years before had said the same thing and had talked about, you know, the fact that you didn't have boundaries set in the sort of in the way, and you know, I had a strict mother and grandmother. It wasn't like I went to a strict school. It wasn't like I could just do what I wanted, but it wasn't sort of coming from a father in the same way. And you know, there was some conversations around that, and I realized, okay, that's why I've got to do something. But it took me a long time, Jason, to find how to do it. And maybe I just wasn't ready within myself. And when it's when I came across some others, again, meeting people who showed me their pathways, which were much harder than mine, but here's all the things that go wrong, and I'll go through the checklist, you know, that because you haven't had a father that, you know, there's obesity, there's aggression, literacy, all of these things I struggled with, right? Socialization, the whole lot of it, right? Trust issues, everything. You realize, okay, this is now what I do. And that made it very specific. And that's really the journey into it. Now, you know, in terms of building the Boys Without Fathers charity, so there's a website, boyswithoutfathers.org. People can see it out there. We are wanting to train other men who did not have a father, or a father left the home early in life, to become men of influence, to show the path for other kids, how not to be a victim of their circumstances and to stand up and go and do things like I've done. I'm not perfect. I've made lots of mistakes. Maybe some of those were because I didn't have a dad, but maybe also the life I've led is, and I know that too, is because I didn't have a father. You know, I've had certain freedoms, yeah. Right? And freedoms in my identity. His name was the same as mine. You know, all of these things is not lost on me that I've been able to go out and do. So I've also taken, it's an opportunity. It's sad in some ways, maybe more for my mother. And, you know, of course you miss something, but you take all of that and think, okay, that's the hand I'm dealt. You go out and do something. And then that's the best way to honor him as well. And I know he looks down at me all the time. His photo is sitting, you know, painting is sitting just across the hallway there. I look around when I'm in trouble. What would you do? Right? And his words come down and Aristotle's words come down. Okay, go and do it. And that's how it is. But I think I can have an influence on to help show the path for other men to be men of influence and step up and help potentially millions of kids out there go and do something great in the world and certainly save themselves a whole lot of trouble.
I love that. I'll absolutely link to that in the show notes. You know, I had Matt Baudreau on the program. He's a partner of Tim Kennedy's, and they have Apogee Strong, which is kind of a father-son mentoring program to raise strong men to make sure that they learn these things, discipline, financial stewardship, just being men of honor. And so anything I think can help to contribute to raising, especially this group, because you're right, the statistics, like in this book I told you about the boy crisis, I was astounded to learn just how the correlation between fatherless homes and addiction, substance abuse, incarceration, yeah. Like you said, violent crime, early death, abuse of spouses or abuse of the opposite sex. I mean, just there is just so much data there to show the adverse impact that not having a father in the home has on our young men. So yeah, I'm so glad you're doing that work.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that, you know, for us setting up the Boys Without Fathers charity, you know, this is going to be a life, you know, a passion and an activity for mine for, you know, the rest of my life. But we're not an island. And I think we know we're going to partner with other groups out there, like some of the ones you've mentioned, and focus on our niche with it, you know, whether it's helping people find their talents, learning to love themselves, you know, that type of stuff, teaching other kids that we don't have to build an empire out of this ourselves. Because there are other organizations, and I think it's great, but how do we all collaborate
exactly
to do more? Because, you know, the percentages of homes where this problem exists is huge.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, huge. It's getting bigger. That's the unfortunate thing. The trajectory is going the wrong way, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Hugh, this has been an enriching conversation. It's times like this, I consider myself the luckiest guy alive. I'm so thankful for you coming on. Tell people where they can learn about your work, where they can follow what you're doing. Where else can people stay connected with you?
Yeah, well, firstly, I want to say thank you, Jason, and this has been one of the best, if not the best podcast I've done somehow. And I'm glad I asked you
Thank
about
you so
your
much.
Entrepreneurial career just before, you know, more before we got on the call. We, you know, this level of connection is just mind blowing for me. So that's the first thing. And so I'm glad I didn't miss this in any way.
Thank you so much.
To find out more about me, what I'm doing, I think the easiest way is to go to dnabehavior.com. If anybody wants to find out about their DNA behavior, hardwired style, that you can take a free trial of the profile there. There's lots of resources, including AI-driven resources to learn more about yourself that are there. There's books. I've written a leadership book, Leadership Behavior DNA, Financial DNA. They all can be found there. So pretty much anything that I've touched or done is there. Podcasts, YouTube videos, you know, that's probably a starting place. And I think the other one that we talked about, the boyswithoutfathers.org site as well. So, you know, we're only starting with that, but I'm getting that ready to go really big.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to figuring out a way to get involved and help you with that and support you. And I'll have all the links to this in the show notes. And with that, Hugh, first, thank you so much for those incredibly kind words. The feeling is completely mutual, brother. This was an amazing time for me. And until we meet again, everyone, Hugh Massey, I'm Jason. Keep continuing to always endeavor to improve, always and always. Thank you so much for listening. Well, that does it for this episode of The Jason Wright Show. Thank you so much for listening. This has been a Texas Titan Media production. Fourth Wall did the music. And as always, thank you so much for listening. Please consider going out to jasonwrightnow.com and signing up for the Vitruvian Letter. Also, please go out to iTunes. It takes like 30 seconds to just leave us a 5-star rating. It does wonders for the podcast. I would be so grateful. And with that, until we meet again, go crush it and endeavor to improve always in all ways. I'm out.